My whole life, I've been told that the first year of parenthood will be the hardest year of your life, that you'll be badly underslept all the time, that the hectic overwhelm will devour every spare moment, that you won't get a spare second of me time to devote to staying sane, that you'll get new mom or new dad brain, happy yet forgetful, irritable, and foggy. I've heard that your productivity in your career or extracurricular pursuits drops off a cliff as you muddle through each day. But with almost 4 months under my belt as a brand new 40-year-old dad, my experience has been very different. Being a parent is easier than I expected so far. This year, I've managed to write 2 books. My income has increased while my working hours have decreased. And I managed to work out and make love to my wife a few times a week. This has a lot to do with the productivity hacks that I've had in place for years, but also due to my stack of healthy habits and the nootropics almost constantly flowing in my blood. The obsessive biohacking and self-care stuff can seem perhaps self-indulgent, but it becomes 1,000% validated when one embarks on the grand adventure of parenthood. And this should have you questioning the other thing you've been told 1,000 times. That advancing age comes with inevitable decline. Might that also be something that was once the non-negotiable human condition, but now is hackable? I think so. And today I'm talking with a man who has made that his mission. I'm joined by Edward Van Harmelen of Youth and Earth. I'm going to call him Ed. Hey, Ed. Welcome.
Hi, Jonathan. Thank you for having me. Lovely introduction. Listening to that. Great to be here. We've known each other for quite some time. It's great to see your channel growing and juggling parenthood and being an author. And just looking forward to speaking to you today.
Certainly. So, when you talk to a person struggling with declining health in one dimension or another, what do you think should come first? Self-quantification, supplements, or storytelling? And let me explain first what I mean by that a little bit. So the traditional kind of approach is when you go to a doctor and you've got pain, or you've got brain fog, or maybe you have sexual issues, the doctor will run a panel of tests to see if there's hormonal issues, if there's nutrient issues. Sometimes the doctor will jump right in with some kind of genomics testing. And then based upon that, the doctor gives you recommendations. But then there's the second approach, which is kind of the biohacker approach, where you just look up what are the supplements that tend to work for the issue that you've got. If you've got fatigue, then something like Eleutheros, Siberian ginseng, or rhodiola, those adaptogens, those are a pretty for sure shot if you're dealing with fatigue. So why mess with that blood test if there's a pretty credible solution for that? And then the third approach is storytelling. And a lot of storytelling is the most effective way that us human beings communicate with each other. Storytelling is the most effective way to change someone's mind about something. And so a lot of times when I'm talking with a person that's describing their challenges, I try to dive right in with a story of transformation because that gives them hope. And then also there's kind of the psychosomatic case for storytelling, that our health and the challenges that we face biologically have everything to do with the stories that we tell ourselves. There's the Dr. Joe Dispenza kind of approach where he says that you need to fix health problems sometimes rapidly, sometimes powerfully, sometimes permanently. You need to reprogram that story on an epigenetic level. They are specific types of meditation, which is kind of pushing into that fringe faith healing area. But I wanted to get your take on that, Ed.
Well, look, for me, I think it comes down to the individual, because I think you need to understand, are they doing kind of the basic things? I mean, if you look at the four pillars of eat, sleep, mind, movement, where are they coming from? Are they someone that's sleeping 8-9 hours a day? Are they drinking water? Are they abstaining from alcohol? Nothing wrong with a little bit of alcohol, but too much. Are they eating the right foods? I do think you have to start with the kind of the basics, like moving, activity. And I think if you're then doing all the basics, managing stress, of course, community, then I mean, in the UK, from the blood testing perspective, there's only so much insight you can get from a lot of panels. So, you know, if you're looking at energy, what are people going to be looking at? Iron, like low iron levels, maybe, might be something they might look at, but that might not necessarily be an indicator. Obviously, stress can have a big impact on your brain, on your mind. So, again, not so easy to test. They're not really easy things that you can test. You can do like hair follicle testing at various times during the day. So look, from my own personal experience, I was someone who had very bad asthma when I was very young, and I ended up in, you know, intensive care like maybe 3 times. And I fixed that myself by just simply increasing lung capacity. You know, doctor told me I needed to increase my lung capacity to offset against the asthma. And I think that's why you see a lot of athletes, actually, for people that used to have asthma when they were younger.
And how did you increase lung capacity?
By simply just exercising. So for someone who couldn't, I couldn't run at all. So you're talking about, you know, one day, run to the end of the road, walk back, get a little bit further, walk back. So everything was kind of incremental. And then, you know, within a month, you're kind of running a couple of kilometers, walking, running, walking, and then you're running more than you're walking, and then so on and so forth. So it was all kind of incremental for me. I think testing has a place, but I think, like you say, I think there's a tendency to think there's something wrong with you, as opposed to maybe looking at the basics. From my perspective, and I'll be honest with you, I've got a kind of a health tech platform. But obviously, when I was growing up, I'm in my 50s now, a lot of that testing wasn't so readily available as it is now. So, you know, I would have gone through probably storytelling, actually, and like motivation, and reading, you know, magazines like Men's Health magazine, which was out when I was kind of growing up, and various kind of like magazines around health. So that's a form of storytelling, right? Someone's telling you, you need to do this, you need to do that. So I think that's always, you watch YouTube videos where people like yourselves are talking about biohacking, things like that. So I think there's an element of always self-experimentation and just trying things. I mean, there's certain, food, for example, is an interesting area with gut health. And that is something that is very tricky and very on trend at the moment. I've had my own problems with my gut. And I think the only way really to fully understand that is to have a test and to keep retesting, because it's all about balance. And there's big indicators there immediately when you have like a gut that's unbalanced. You get a lot of negative connotations with that. And then, of course,
I think the recommendation, because people have seen like the Viome kits where you send a poop sample back to them, and then they tell you about all the little gut buddies that you've got going on down there and where you might be deficient. And the recommendation is to get something like that done about once a year. There's certain self-quantification things that are like every day. Like if you've got a HRV tracker, that's an everyday kind of thing. Genomics testing, you only need to get that done once, because your genes don't change. Whereas, I've heard that is get the gut thing done about once a year. But I have to admit, I have not done that. But sorry, continue with what you were saying.
Yeah, I think it really depends on how bad you are. I mean, I've learned a lot through the process as I've tried to discover my own gut problems. And it is very, very complex. And you can see why they use these big AI algorithms to try and figure it out. But if you have an overabundance, like these kind of bacteria have different primary functions. So if you have an overabundance of some primary functions, it can relate to symptoms like, gas, for example, where you might find you need to be on a low FODMAP diet, and other kind of problems around kind of IBS and various kind of gut irritability, inflammation. So a lot of that is linked to an unbalanced gut microbiome. But like you said, getting your genes tested, I've had that done, and, touch wood, it came back pretty clear. There's obviously some things like selenium or vitamin D3 that I've got to you've got to take larger doses of. And obviously you've got your blood, you can look at blood testing, you do all your organs, your liver, your kidneys, your heart. It's important to do all of those, your hormones as well. So I think it really depends on how old you are as well. From my perspective, when I was kind of growing up, the doctors would do these tests and you'd never actually see the results, so they'd always just tell you, everything's fine. Your liver's a bit high, as it would be when you're young, probably drinking too much. But from my personal point of view is just to start implementing things into your daily lifestyle. So I like a bit of supplementation or storytelling, and then I tend to look at wearables and tracking, but I don't obsess too much about it. I mean, I've got a watch on now, but I would tend to use that a little bit more down the gym when I'm working out and training into different zones. So I'm trying to optimize the training. Things like understanding morning readiness is quite good with your HRV. So you know when you're tired, when you're ready to go and exercise. I think that's quite useful. But after a while, you kind of know your body. So in the end, after a while, you kind of know when you haven't had good sleep. Your HRV levels are probably down, heart rate's up. I mean, you kind of get in tune with your body, right? So you start understanding, certainly with sleep tracking. And again, I have an Oura Ring. I've just invested in a new tool. I think once you start understanding like what works for you. I don't obsess as much over the data as I used to. You know, I kind of know now to sleep regularly, not to eat before I go to bed. There are certain things you want to avoid, like glucose spikes, like, you know, kind of late, you know, in the early hours of the morning. Yeah, so I think it's a combination, Jonathan, really, of all those things, you know. But I think just the basics of, like, doing the basics. And I'd be surprised there's a lot of people probably not just not doing that, you know. And, of course, you know, some people like yourselves, busy father, you know, working, finding the time, right, to incorporate all this stuff.
The solution to time is, I think, intolerance. I think this is if there's younger people listening to this, I would urge them to just become more and more and more intolerant with the time wasters, because that's how you liberate your time so that you can do the meaningful things that ultimately support your family, support one's mission in life. And yeah, with the trackables and the self-quantification, there can be a bit of a analysis paralysis trap. But my finding was kind of similar, was that the first maybe 6 months that you are using something like an HRV tracker, you're a bit kind of obsessive about it. And you're like, oh no, my readiness score is bad today, so I can't do a workout. But yeah, over time, that number on the tracker gives you feedback on your habits. And so then you just naturally readjust your habits with the information that you're receiving. And so you don't end up drowning in an ocean of data. So yeah, I'm a pretty big fan of those things, especially something like the HRV tracker watches, because we all are bio individuals. And so what knocks your HRV down into the basement might be something that you think is perfectly benign, or there might be something that is, I'll just give a personal example, is I use nicotine often. It's a smart drug that's just really conducive to my neurobiology. And I was talking with Dr. Torkil, who's one of the top doctors in Norway, about this. And his finding was that nicotine was awful. It just, his HRV just went off a cliff. Whereas I found that nothing is better for my HRV than nicotine. And that's the kind of thing that you wouldn't know if you weren't self-quantifying. So yeah, there is certainly a case for that. I wanted to get into your background some more. I understand that there was a shocking blood test that was your catalyst, and it was kind of a personal breaking point that turned you from a finance professional into now a longevity entrepreneur. Can you tell us a little more about that?
No, exactly. So, I mean, going back to, you know, and I'm talking here from someone who was optimizing, going to the gym constantly from the age of 17. You know, I mentioned I was, you know, had bad asthma, got, you know, so I played a lot of sport. I traveled all around the world with my career. And then, yes, I essentially, I would have been in my early 40s, and then realized, you know, had a test, realized there was a lot of things kind of out of whack, and really then started just kind of drilling down. So everything from, you know, cholesterol, hormones were off, you know, liver was off. So yeah, the blood test kind of triggered something in me, I think, to like make me realize, okay, need to start looking at something here. And then that's when I really started getting into my supplements.
And what was the first one that you what was the first one you tried that had like a wow kind of effect for you?
Well, the first supplement that I really, I mean, of course, I took some, you know, earlier on, I'd lived in South Africa for a couple of years. And I think it wasn't until I was like 37, 38, I started taking like protein and amino acids and things like that. But the first one where I really noticed a big difference actually was NMN, which is nicotinamide mononucleotide. And that was the first one where I was like, oh, wow. I'd now got the energy that I had 20 years ago in just a consistent energy, no crash. You know, then I learned, of course, that was because of like declining NAD levels. And I'd found somewhere essentially where I could test NAD. So, you know, taking the NMN afterwards, I saw those levels go up. So, yeah, that was one of my earliest insights into the whole longevity movement. Previously, I had kind of a negative connotation towards aging, mostly to do with what I'd seen in the UK in the NHS and how people were treated as they got older. And very different system, you know. Back in my day, everyone was working for big companies or corporates, and it was like, you know, you kind of had a job, you stuck to it, you were there for 30, 35 years, you retired at 55. So it didn't sound like much fun. So I kind of left when I was in my early 20s, and I stayed overseas for like 20 odd years. So I'd been overseas for about 25 years, living in different countries. And through that process, I saw a lot of amazing things happening. Just people doing new jobs, new careers, new challenges as I got older. So that really inspired me to dig more into the whole aging process and understand it a little bit more. I kind of understood. Back then, I was also working as a contractor or a consultant. So a lot of that meant that I was in this kind of gig economy, which was, you know, 20 odd years ago with none of the kind of technology that we've got today. So I knew I had to stay on top of my health, because if I didn't work, I didn't get paid. So sick days were really just a total...
Not an option.
Not an option.
Not an option over here either.
No, but I mean, I was living in Brazil, Japan, Australia. I was living in Hong Kong, Dubai, you know, Italy, Germany, Austria, France, Ireland. So, you know, you're traveling around, you're going into different countries. You just got to make sure. And of course, you know, when you're contracting, you've got to be in every day. You've got to be like first one in, last one out. You know, so yeah, it really became just a primary focus. Like everything evolved around health.
What are some health hacks that you discovered in the different places you lived?
Yeah, good question. I mean, obviously, I think it was all very different. I mean, I got much more into strength training when I was living in South Africa. I mean, I don't know if you know much about South Africa, but they build them slightly different there. I would have been like, I had a DEXA scan, and the guy said I had one of the biggest muscle masses he'd seen on a scan in terms of just muscle density. But I didn't have that when I was younger. I would say that's something I've developed probably since I was in South Africa, and that was a lot more weight training. But you know, training with intent. Obviously, protein intake, like increasing the protein. These sound all like quite common, but I guess like, you know, 15, 16 years ago, it was relatively amino acids, relatively new. I mean, I was doing, you know, high intensity training. Again, something I've been doing for quite a long time. I picked that up when I was living in Germany, which would have been like late 90s, early 2000s. I saw the Germans were doing it quite a bit, and that, you know, very healthy race. So I was like, started getting into like, so I picked up along the way, you know, in Germany, we were doing saunas. It's very common in Germany to have saunas. So I was incorporating that high intensity training. They would have also like cold pools. So, you know, a lot of these things we take for granted, they've been incorporated into a lot of, like in Scandinavia, right? It's not uncommon to have a sauna right next to a lake. And that's been going on for years. So, you know.
And you did the sauna to icy swim in the lake thing?
No, I never did that in Scandinavia, but in Germany, they used to have these cold baths. So there was quite common in Germany that all the gyms would have saunas, and a lot of them have like cold pools. So I don't know if you've been to Baden-Baden. There's a big wellness center in Germany.
No. I'd lived in Berlin for like 2.5 months, but mostly just went to discos. Regrettably.
Okay, yeah. Trezor and techno and things like that, yeah. So, you know, I know, you know, for me, you know, a lot of the things that we talk about incorporating, I've been doing a lot of this stuff for a very long time. So this is where I think looking at these kind of longevity supplements, because I was someone who was drinking 3 or 4 liters of water a day, I was sleeping well, I was managing my stress levels through actually like exercising and running and things like that, which I think is a great way to just manage mental health. That's where the optimization part of the longevity supplements came in, because then I realized, there's actually certain gene expressions that I need to take something to trigger it, because, you know, naturally I'm not going to be able to, I can only do so much, I guess. So this is things like boosting NAD and looking at the longevity pathways like sirtuins.
Okay, I want to talk some more about supplements, but first I need to give a really good life hack / biohack that I picked up from my days as a wanderer around this world. And that is coconuts. And I started raw coconuts. I started eating coconuts when I lived in Costa Rica, because Costa Rican food is awful. It's all their food is just like fried crap. Like a fancy dinner is just like rice and fried chicken. And so coconuts are dirt cheap there, because they grow from practically every palm tree. You have to worry about them falling on your heads if you're out in out of the islands or on the beach. So I started eating coconuts every day. I would just buy a raw coconut, and I discovered, I think I'm the discoverer of this. I discovered the best way to open coconuts. It is not with a machete. You will inevitably lose a digit if you're using a machete on your coconuts.
Yeah.
What you do is you take a raw coconut, you take a coconut in the shell, and you wrap it up in a plastic bag, and then you just chuck it on the ground, and it'll burst in the bag, and then you have, an awesome MCT rich meal to eat. And I started doing that in Costa Rica, and I've done that for, I think, 14 years now. I've had a coconut almost every single day. And I discovered, oddly enough, this is a economic mystery to me. I discovered that coconuts cost about $1 everywhere in the world, from like South America to Eastern Europe. They cost just about $1, and they make for this great, nutritious meal. They taste a little boring, so I add dark chocolate. In Panama, I visited a chocolate farm once upon a time and got some of that like amazing fresh cacao, dark chocolate. And then I made a dumb joke about wanting to buy the chocolate farm, and so then they tried to sell me the chocolate farm, but I couldn't afford to buy a chocolate farm, so I just left on my little boat.
It would be a good investment. Chocolate's up.
Is it? Okay. But that seems that running a farm in Panama seems like seems like a lot of chaos. So I'm glad I went in a little bit different direction in my career. I always tell people this, if people are like kind of confused about diet and where to start with diet, I tell them, just replace one of your meals a day with raw coconut. And it's going to give you this like, it gives you a pretty good burn of energy. And it helps you lose weight, and it's good for your skin. It's a beautifying super food, and it only costs $1. And that's one of those health hacks that I never would have ran into if I had stayed in my geographic comfort zone.
Yeah, I used to when I lived in Brazil. I actually lived on the beach right next on Copacabana, one block. So there's a very famous run where you can run from Copacabana to Leblon. So Ipanema, Leblon and back. It's like 14 kilometers. So I used to do that like 3 or 4 times a week. And always at the end of it, I'd have a coconut to celebrate, you know, to replenish, you know, so... not so easy to get in London now, coconuts. So where you are they easy to find?
Yeah. In fact, there's a little veggie dealer nearby where we live, and we went in there and like negotiated a deal with them where we told them that we want them to carry coconuts, and we will buy at least 7 coconuts a week. And I also find that coconut water is good for my wife's breast milk supply.
Okay.
So coconuts are just awesome. But let's talk about NMN some, because NMN, that is pretty mind-blowing stuff. It came on my radar in, I think, 2019 when I saw this case report on the Longevity anti-aging forums, and there was a biohacker who had done this really meticulously documented experiment where he had gotten practically a ton of different biomarkers done, and then he went on an aggressive NMN regimen. He was taking quite a bit of it. He was taking like grams of it a day, and over the course of, I believe, 7 months, I have an article that includes all the details, and I'm going to link to that article in the show notes for this podcast so people can check it out, because it's kind of a fantastic claim. In, I think it was 7 months, he decreased his biological age from 70 to 40, which is, like, that's pretty awesome. And that came with all the kinds of effects that you would expect. His energy levels exploded. And specifically, he also talked about his mobility, that his kind of hunchback was gone, and that he was just moving much more like a supple leopard. And yeah, so that one really stands out. I kind of hang out a lot in like the conspiracy fringe corner of the internet, and there was this huge fear with the rollout of 5G, that like 5G was going to like kill everything on planet Earth, and that like everybody was going to get cancer because of global 5G, and we're all still here. So that fear might have been a little bit overblown. But then I read Dr. Mercola's book, EMF'd. I think this is his best book. And he breaks down why EMFs are so problematic. And he does it without being like crazy conspiratorial. He does it with a tremendous abundance of evidence. And what he points to is the NAD boosters, because the NAD boosters fuel the PARP system, the DNA repair system. And those EMFs are bad for us. But unless you're going to be like a monk that goes and lives in a cave in the wilderness, those EMFs are inevitable. And so these days, I don't fret a whole lot about EMFs because there's just not that much I can do about them. I'd try to turn off the Wi-Fi before bed, turn off the smartphone if I'm not using it, those sorts of things. But I think that being making sure that we have quotidian, which stands for every day, making sure that we have everyday intake of NAD boosters is now a necessity in the world that has been EMF'd, as Dr. Mercola would say.
Yeah, I think EMF is one element to look at, but I think in general, even before EMF, like just as you get older, historically we weren't supposed to be on the planet for as long as we are, right? You know, like over time, life expectations increased. So I do think like you get to a certain age and it's not just, DNA repair, but there's so many other, your mitochondrial dysfunctions, how you absorb nutrients change. As you mentioned, DNA repair, you've probably heard of telomeres. We know through Alzheimer's, we have like these amyloid plaques where like you have a protein control issues. So, there are all these elements of aging. NAD levels is one of them. And that just, we know that naturally declines with age. So there's lots of studies that show that by the time you're in your 50s, you've got half those levels. So this is the thing with aging is I think you can either, depending on your lifestyle, you can either age fast or age slow. And I think, we can look back at pictures over time, even in history books, and look at people when they were in their 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s. And even now, we're seeing people in their 50s are looking much younger and look better if they look after themselves than they would have done maybe 20, 30 years ago. So I think, NMN is one spoke in the wheel of tackling aging. Like you say, everything around us is essentially affecting, we lose collagen, we lose hyaluronic acid, our genes don't fire off as they used to. So this is just happening like systemically, right, in the body as we get older.
Another thing that I found interesting about NMN is it essentially greases the epigenetic wheels. And at the same time that I was reading up on NMN, I was reading You Are the Placebo by Dr. Joe Dispenza, where he has a methodology essentially for yielding the placebo effect, which is the power of belief, and using it for changing our health. And there's some kind of metaphysical types of explanations posited for this. There's actually a lot of very like scientific biohackers who think that like we live in the Matrix and that with the power of belief we can hack the Matrix to get whatever we want. And that might be what this truly is. Maybe after this life is over, we'll find out about that. But the more materialist explanation for the placebo effect is that it is neuropeptides from our brains interacting with our bodies and interacting with the genome. And that is exactly what NMN kind of greases the wheels on. So when I'm talking to, getting back to that first question, sometimes you'll deal with a person that you think is going to be like better persuaded by storytelling. So in that case, go with the storytelling. But a lot of times you're dealing with someone who seems more rationally inclined. And so with those kind of people, yeah, I'll usually tell them, here, just take NMN every day and see what happens. But I'll also tell them, make sure you read up on NMN, because NMN, I want to give people like a two-part stack of the actual pharmacological mechanism of NMN along with that belief piece. And so, yeah, I tell people to read up on NMN, and I've done a bunch of podcasts on it. I did, I think, a 4,000-word article on it because I want the rational person, which is, I think, the majority of my audience, to really understand the scientific case for it so that that belief mechanism comes into play when they start using it. Because a lot of times with our health issues or with our issues that we have in our personal life, professional life, we kind of need that escape velocity boost away from the pattern and the pain of the past. And a blood test is not going to give you that escape velocity. It's going to be potent pharmacological agents. And that's why, yeah, sometimes I'm a little bit different. I maybe stand out a little bit in the holistic health kind of space, because I don't tell people to just start by cleaning up your diet some. Instead, I'll start by saying, take like a really potent nootropic and you're going to get really motivated, and then you're going to have the capacity to do things like picking the right thing at the grocery store when you're browsing the grocery store in a exhausted state at 10 p.m. before the grocery store closes, when we tend to make bad decisions within the aisles there.
No, I totally agree. And this is the part where when we talk about blood testing, it really ultimately what you're trying to do is behavioral change, right? You know, because essentially it's the changes in behavior that then, as you say, it changes your mindset, changes potentially your outcomes. So having a positive mindset, and if you take a product and it gives you more, like a pre-workout is a very good example. You could take a pre-workout, it motivates you to work out more, right? You take protein, you start seeing some muscles, you want to start doing more. So I think we live in a world where people want to see fast results. And so, yeah, if you can take a product that can stimulate your brain, mind, focus, it can improve output, that can be very motivating, right? Everything, I think, in life is a lot around momentum. So, you know, habit, I'm a bit of a creature of habit, but I'm able to kind of, if I can get into, start forming those positive habits, that I can tend to stay with it and keep with it.
So I wanted to talk some about what's behind me here, which is these three stacks that I've been on for the past month, which are from you guys, which are from Youth and Earth. All right. We've got a mighty package from Youth and Earth. So let's unbox. And this is a major life hack for greater satisfaction as a biohacker, is to use a knife for your unboxing. I'm just telling you, it's all the more satisfying to use a Leatherman knife for your unboxing, because otherwise you end up just taking too much time pulling things apart. And what I'm pleased about with Youth and Earth, what I'm really pleased about, as I mutilate this box, is that they got this to us fast, didn't they? I think it was something like 5 days? Yeah,
I think it was about 5 days for them to get this whole package to us, even here in Europe, where sometimes things can take a little longer. Okay, V14. The relentless march of time, it feels like an unstoppable machine working against us. Very eloquent. So this is their new anti-aging product. Okay, sleep dust. And Youth and Earth, I reviewed their stuff before, and what I recall before that I really liked about them was the flavor engineering. These guys take the flavor engineering thing seriously. Whoa. Okay, so this is going to be my virginal experience with V14, and I'm still not sure what is the difference between this and this. Ah, okay, check this out. Okay, this is this is what you consume it in. Aha, cool. Nice. Look at that. That is a nice little glass water bottle, and I really appreciate that they went with a glass water bottle so that we get to avoid the BPAs. Yeah, that's a really good thing when we can do that. So, okay, I think I should just try it for the first time here, because I'm really curious about the taste. And so this thing, I bet there's a proper... Yeah, check this out. Okay, recommended is 350. See, they've got... Okay, there's some instructions that I need to read on this, but I'm just going to do the typical thing, which is disregarding the instructions and going kind of ad hoc on it. Okay, first of all, so it's kind of a kind of pinkish powder. Oh, whoa. That smells really good. But it's going to make me sneeze. Is it going to make me sneeze? No. It didn't make me sneeze. Okay. So, let's just pour some water. And we could try a scoop of it now. And later on, I'm going to be evaluating all the ingredients. Whoa, that's a big scoop. Look at the size of that scoop. Okay, this is a substantial stack with like a bunch of different anti-aging longevity agents in it. So yeah, let's just do that to start with. Okay, and then my boom is back here. So we will give it a stir. And let's give it a go. Okay, this tastes like a girly cocktail. Kinda sorta. You know the kind of cocktails that they have at like ladies' nights? Like those cocktails that just bring out the the danger and the skank in all of us. It tastes kinda like that. But I'm pretty sure it just it just uses natural sweeteners. Whoa, okay. That is, or let's see, it's not super sweet. But yeah, first impression, girly cocktail. Little bit of vodka in this.
I got to tell you, Ed, like my energy levels have been like really rearing to go this past month. I'm not sure if I can credit this to like these products or if it's a thing where as like a brand new dad, there's like a genetic evolutionary psychology switch that gets flipped, that just like gives me a great well of motivation and optimism. But I think these products have something to do with that, because it's been a very good month here and a challenging one and a challenging one. But I feel like I've managed the challenges quite well. I haven't had like an episode where I yelled at my wife, haven't yelled at the baby. And that was my covenant that I made with myself. When I became a father, as I said, I don't want to be like an angry father, or if I'm angry, I don't want to be like angry in front of him. And yeah, I feel like I've done a pretty good job at that, despite like mounting challenges and overwhelm.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think all the products that really I created those products to kind of incorporate into your daily life. I'm a big believer that, you know, when we take these supplements, and obviously been taking a lot of supplements for a while now, you can get a little bit overwhelmed by all the capsules. And remember to take them all. So with the AMPM and the V14, they come in sachet form. So also, of course, with sachets, you can get really good doses in there as well. And the AM, I think, you know, it's got a lot of like kind of medicinal mushrooms in there. So it's got, you know, cordyceps, which we know famously Bruce Lee was on. Lion's Mane.
Really?
Yeah, Bruce Lee was a big cordyceps guy, yeah.
Okay, what was his quote? I fear not the man who has practiced 10,000 kicks once, but the man who has practiced one kick 10,000 times. Life is not about the great increase, but the great decrease. Hack away at the unessential.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that he was actually one of the first biohackers, really. Actually, it's very interesting. If you see these Bruce Lee documentaries, he was doing a lot of stuff very, very early on. He was miles ahead of his time, right? He was taking, you know, cordyceps and other products. I know he was big into his protein powders even then, like in the 70s. So, yeah, he was miles ahead. But cordyceps is known again to, you know, give you a lot of energy. So it's got, you know, ginseng, cordyceps, lion's mane, reishi, turkey tail, you know, maca, ginkgo biloba. So that's the AM. And it's just really more, I don't know if you drink much coffee. You said you take nicotine, right?
Yeah. And I have one strong coffee a day.
Yeah. So the AM really, I think, is just more of a coffee kind of substitute. I mean, I drink quite a bit of coffee. So for me, it's just, you know, something else to incorporate. If you don't drink caffeine, it's just a great kind of energy booster. And then the PM essentially was, you know, again, just something to help you relax and sleep at night. And it's got, you know, passion flower. It's got some reishi, ashwagandha in there, valerian root, some 5-HTP and hemp seed, L-theanine. So that's just to help you kind of relax in the evening.
The Sleep Dust PM product, I think that's my favorite. The taste on that is to die for. It kind of tastes like a hot chocolate, which brings back like some pleasant childhood memories of a hot chocolate before bed, which now we know it's like insane to have like all of that like fructose of the hot chocolate mix from the Walmart before bed. But and that product has, I think it's a decaf cacao in it, right?
Yeah, it's a very, very, it's a ceremonial grade from Ecuador, ceremonial grade cacao. But yeah, I think it's the amount of caffeine in there is micro dose. It's insignificant. I think there's obviously some natural caffeine in chocolate, but not enough that would affect your sleep.
Matthew Walker put out, it was just a tweet. It was just a tweet, but he's the big sleep researcher. And he said snacking on chocolate before bed is a pretty bad idea because of that caffeine content in if you have a dark chocolate before bed. The only time I would recommend this is if a sexy time is going to ensue. Then it's worth it. But otherwise, yeah, go decaf on your cacao before bed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then we've got the V14, which is essentially taking, all the longevity kind of products I think you need to take all in one dose. So really, that's just incorporating, your NMNs, your spermidines, your calcium AKGs. It's got taurine, L-carnitine, resveratrol, fisetin, quercetin. It's got carotenoids. It's got a number of magnesium malate. So it's got 14 longevity ingredients, microdose lithium. So it's got lots of products in there that help with kind of mitochondrial function, that help with stress responses, metabolism. And we did a study against AG1, which is going out now on the abstract to a bunch of papers that hopefully will show that V14 using C. elegans slowed down aging and increased health span.
And last time we talked, we had touched on this topic of microdosing anti-aging ingredients. And so V14 has a couple that are microdosed. And well, okay, I did some thinking about this. And here's kind of the case for this is you're going to have your autophagy promoters. And then you're going to also have your senolytics. And these are essentially like taking out the trash of your old dead cells that you don't really want hanging around. But actually, you don't want to go really aggressive with autophagy and senolytic supplements. Of course, you can buy like quercetin, and you can take quercetin in rather large quantities, and you'll get like a little bit of extra bang for your buck out of your coffee if you do that, which is kind of nice. But you wouldn't want to take something like quercetin all the time in large doses, because autophagy and cell senescence, these are processes that the body does itself. And when you are introducing a supplement that stimulates that, especially, and if you're doing it like long term, and if you're doing it at rather large doses, then you kind of end up unbalanced on the wrong side, where you're stimulating too much autophagy and too much cell senescence. And so that's kind of the case for a stack like this, because if you were going to take something like 35 milligrams of fisetin, that is a vanishingly small amount. Like if you measure out 35 milligrams of a supplement, it's this tiny amount, and you're going to like spill it on your desk half the time, as I have hundreds of times in my life. Yet you end up, so there's kind of like two approaches to supplementation. And one approach is that you carefully select a single ingredient supplement that you want to try, and then you experiment with a variety of dosages on it. Like you start with NMN and you take 200 milligrams of NMN, and then you try NMN at 500 milligrams, and then try it at a gram, try it at 1500 milligrams. And you'll ascertain kind of like a sweet spot. For me, I found like with NMN, there was a rather mild nootropic effect at like 1500 milligrams. And there's better nootropics, they're better like stimulators of brain power. And so I said, okay, I have a lot of other things to stimulate brain power. I just like that NAD boost and I want that to be more sustained and regular. So I'm just going to take NMN at 500 milligrams. So that's the kind of thing that you figure out when you're doing like a single ingredient. But then on the other hand, there's like the stack approach where you take a product with a bunch of different things in it. And the trade-off there, I suppose it can be kind of a trade-off between like tedium and convenience. Like I've had times where I was taking like little tiny microdoses of different smart drugs because I wanted to figure out if they moved the needle, and then a lot of times they didn't really. Whereas if you're taking a stack, then you are getting an abundance of ingredients. But the downside is perhaps that you don't know, you don't exactly know what in that stack is really moving the needle for you. And so I kind of suggest that people just try both things. Like when I got into nootropics, I tried a bunch of different stacks. Some were pretty good, a lot were so-so. And then I discovered paracetam, and I would take like a gram or two of paracetam, and that would like outperform a lot of the nootropic stacks that were out there. And everyone's going to be different on that account. And so, yeah, that's why I urge people to like experiment with both things. Like, and in particular, NMN is probably one where it's worth doing that N of one experiment with just one ingredient, and then maybe do that for maybe a month or two, and then go on something like V14, and you'll figure out what's like really worth it for the individual.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when I look at aging, and we talk about these hallmarks of aging, I'm not looking at it like an individual. First of all, obviously, we know that actually if you combine some of these ingredients together, which we've seen, you actually get an actual uplift on bioavailability when they're combined synergetically. But essentially, each hallmark, if you've got 11 or 12 hallmarks, and we know this, you know, the 2013 paper, I think, is one of the most cited papers out there in science in terms of people agreeing these are the main causes of aging. Essentially, this isn't something that you could go in and take a senolytic twice a month, possibly. Equally, the most important thing I think is like taking a product that you can incorporate into your daily life in a sachet form, in a powder form, and you just take it consistently like a multivitamin. What V14 is really is it's got the multivitamin aspect to it because it's got kind of your essential vitamins and minerals that you don't get so easily from your diet, but it's also got the longevity aspect to it. And what we see with these hallmarks of aging is if you have like four or five ingredients tackling each hallmark, some in bigger doses, some in smaller doses, that's also just as effective. We've seen one staff member anecdotally on using the Horvath's clock have a reversal of chronological age. We've done some transcription seeing on the C. elegans that like kind of the activities around stressing the cells, and as I talked about before, energy production, metabolism, generally slowing down aging has been shown in these C. elegans studies. So I think, like you say, it's about taking something on a daily basis, incorporate it into a daily basis. It's not so easy now to test for senescence and to understand it, but I think we're looking at things like inflammation is a good marker for that. Some of the products are at slightly lower doses, but combined, when you look at like activator to inactivity, they can work quite well. And I think also with microdosing, it's like little nudges rather than some big nudge. It's like small little nudges that you incorporate daily into your lifestyle.
There's an interesting argument to also be made for microdosing that comes out of the world of homeopathy. And if you Google search homeopathy, they're going to give you the Wikipedia article right there, front and center, that says homeopathy is a big scam. But if you go deeper and you go into PubMed, you'll see like actually a lot of surprising evidence for homeopathy, where they take a supplement and then they put it into water and then they reduce and reduce and reduce and reduce and reduce and reduce the amount of that supplement that's in the water that people are actually consuming. But if you look at a broader alternative health practice, like in Germany, homeopathy is actually like very commonly used, and Germans rather practical people. And so I believe the argument for homeopathy is that these different nutrients and micronutrients, that some of their effect is a pharmacological mechanistic effect. You can imagine like that net of activated carbon, where let's say you do some drinking and then you take activated charcoal, and then that net of carbon is going to be capturing the acetaldehyde and dragging it out of your system. So there's that, the mechanistic process, but there in homeopathy, they argue that there's also a frequency thing going on, where each one of these micro nutrients, these introduce different frequencies into our body. And you can look at like the way that mitochondria communicate with each other photonically. You can look at the fact that when a baby is conceived and the sperm meets the egg, there's a photonic emission that goes with it. That's kind of one of those like magical things about life, about the creation of life, right? And so there's an argument for microdosing in that this will communicate via frequency for your body to do the things that your body needs to do. Yeah, that was a thought that I had on that also, because yes, this is a pervasive thing that you find as you delve a little bit more into alternative health, is that sometimes things relying on frequencies can have really dramatic effects, where there's just not that much of like not that much quantity of a nutrient that should be acting on the biology, but yet something exciting happens.
Yeah, I mean, not all, you know, not every ingredient is made equal, right? I mean, if you look at pharmaceuticals, I mean, when was the last time you took a drug where it's got like 200 milligrams or 500 milligrams or 600? Normally it's 1 milligram, 2 milligrams. So, at a pharmaceutical level, everything's microdosed. There's certain, some of these ingredients, the proven studies are at microdosing levels, like spermidine triggering autophagy is seen at microdosing. Lithium, for example, I think the trace amounts of lithium have been seen in epidemiology and studies where populations of, have trace amounts of lithium in the drinking water, which have linked to lower rates of dementia and Alzheimer's, and helping stabilize mood. So we know that lithium can support certain areas of neurogenesis and brain-derived neurofactors at very high levels. Of course, it's used to treat bipolar, and obviously is a very different animal, but same with psilocybin as well. You know, psilocybin at very low levels has been shown to, a lot of studies shown to improve mental health and creativity. So everything it's not quite as, I don't think it's quite as straightforward. As I said before, the study that we did against AG1, and if you look at, say, Athletic Greens, showed overall about a 40% increase in health span over AG1 on the C. elegans. So they were all moving, the mobility was better, they moved faster, they moved quicker across the whole stack.
There was a video I caught on the internet. There's this guy, his name is Scott Carney. Yeah, he's a journalist, and he kind of hates the supplement industry, and he actually does very good. I guess he's kind of like an anti-biohacker, but I still watch his videos for some reason, because he does like some pretty good investigations. And he had a really thorough investigation of AG1. And there was a bunch of shady stuff about AG1. So I'm going to link.
That was to do with the owner, though, right? I think, was it more to do with the owner of AG1 rather than AG1 itself? Or
I think both. I think both. Yeah.
Right.
So you got to be kind of suspicious of like anything that's like really mainstream popular. If you've seen 10 YouTubers promote a particular product, then you should probably become really suspicious of it. If you see a product promoted by like only one YouTuber, then it might be okay.
Well, yeah, that's the case with V14 at the moment then. I mean, you know, all you can do is benchmark it against the more popular products, right? And just to show that essentially, I think what we're doing is we're trying to make longevity affordable. We're incorporating, you're incorporating your kind of multivitamins in there as well, because it's got your D3, your K2s, it's got your active form of folate, selenium, zinc, copper, vitamin C. But it's also got, you know.
Yeah, I appreciated that it had the 5-MTHF. I'm saying it wrong. The methyltrixafolate. Yeah. And my whole genome sequencing said that's stuff that I should really be taking. And I hadn't started taking it. And then I saw it there on, I think, the AM bundle. And I was like, oh, great. I'm supposed to be taking this one.
Yeah, exactly. I think a third of Caucasians seem to have an issue with methylfolate, right? There's like a gene mutation that goes around that they need to take the active form. So yeah, again, you know, if you're one of those people, you should hopefully see a result. But instead of like buying tons and tons and tons of products, it's just incorporating it all into one, you know?
It tastes like a girly shot, kind of. I like that. I've thought about adding just a little bit of vodka to it.
Yeah, I think the first ones are very much like a Bloody Mary or something like that, you know?
That's something I like. Okay, two things I like about Youth and Earth, why you guys stand out to me, is the taste engineering. Everything I've tried from you guys is, yeah, it tastes like good enough that it takes away from the tedium of consuming supplements. And the other thing that's actually a lot more important than that is that you guys do COAs of all products. You can find those on your website that I'm going to link to. And you get the spectroscopy done by accredited labs in, I think, the USA and maybe a lab in Europe also.
Yes. Wherever we can do it, it depends. I mean, we've got one lab. I know we have a Lion's Mane product that's got the erinaceans and heracinons. And again, that might be a specific lab that would do that in the USA. So it really depends. But we're actually, really going all in on the testing, making sure that every batch is now tested for microbials, lead, you know, heavy metals, and proving that everything is what it says it is in each dose.
On your website, you write articles. I found your article on melatonin today.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed you find time to write a bunch of articles on top of everything else. Those had better not be AI articles, Ed.
Well, melatonin is something I've taken for a long time. I stopped taking it like a year or two ago, and tried to wean my way off it simply because it was hard to get in the UK. I'm trying to explore into like phytomelatonins now and looking at seeing whether or not you can get, there's a couple of ingredient manufacturers coming out where you can get like vegetable sourced melatonin at certain doses to hit that kind of that sweet spot. But you know, I was a big fan of melatonin. I just
phytomelatonin.
So it's like it's melatonin derived from, there's melatonin found again in very small quantities, like tomatoes have melatonin, but certain varieties of tomatoes will have melatonin depending on where it's grown, etc. So melatonin's banned in the UK. So
yeah, I have a couple of British friends that are like desperate for melatonin. So I'm thinking I can get in America, I can get massive quantities of melatonin bagged. And so what I'm thinking I'm going to do, I'm going to have family bring melatonin to me here in Bulgaria. And then I'm going to take an odyssey up to Calais in France. And then I'm going to pretend that I'm an illegal immigrant trying to break into the UK. And I'm going to get on one of those boats that cross the channel. And then I'll dive into the water at one point, and I'll bring some scuba gear along with me because I am a PADI certified diver. And I'll like swim down to like a Roman ship that's wrecked, like next to the cliffs of Dover. And then in the wreckage of the ship, I mean, I put like a big bag of melatonin that's like wrapped, double, triple wrapped so that water doesn't get in it, and then leave it there with a GPS tracker. And then the British biohackers can come swim down there and go and get it out. Because I know how desperate the English are for good melatonin.
You have fooled that out big time. Yes, we are desperate. We are desperate for melatonin. I think, well, we could probably come up with something a bit simpler than that, though, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, you can. I think you can get it. It's on prescription, right? So it's always interesting how different countries perceive certain products. Like as you say, in the USA, you can find it in CVS, Walgreens, etc. I mean, it's obviously great for jet lag, predominantly, and if you travel a lot. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think. I mean, the PM definitely helps, but I'd like to explore kind of like the phytomelatonin side of things, like try and get kind of sort of plant-based melatonin.
And did you not include melatonin in the PM stack because some people have really awful dreams on melatonin?
Yeah, I didn't include it more because of regulation in the UK, because when MHRA say something's banned, it's not a good idea to try and sell it. Or I should say it requires a prescription. I don't know. I mean, on melatonin, some people say they have some bad dreams on it, lucid dreams, vivid dreams. You know, there's pros and cons for it. Some people swear by it. I don't know. What's your experience with it?
I'm a pretty big fan of melatonin. I actually do some mega dosing of melatonin. When I take it at the RDA recommended dosages, I'm not sure what it's doing for me. I mean, it's probably doing something for me, but yeah. I will mega dose it at 5 milligrams, 10 milligrams. I've also done. There was an author who wrote a book specifically on melatonin. I'm going to find that book and link it in the show notes. And he had actually done megadosing of melatonin for quite a while with no adverse effects. And so that got me inspired to experiment a little bit. So I got it powdered. And I have done some megadosing of melatonin. And yeah, I sleep quite good. There's anecdotal evidence that in cases where people get their circadian rhythm, obviously if you're flying from one place to another, you need to reset circadian rhythm, and melatonin is helpful for that. But there's also cases where people have a trauma and their trauma robs sleep, like real serious PTSD that robs sleep from people. And there's anecdotal evidence that mega doses of melatonin, taking up to, I think, 300 milligrams actually, can be like really transformational for those kind of cases. So more recently, I think I've tried it at up to 100 milligrams. And I just noticed that I was sleeping pretty good. It doesn't taste great powdered. But then I said, okay, what you always hear about melatonin is that it might create a hormonal dependency. So I said, I should go off of this and see what happens. And it didn't really cause me much sleep problems going off of it. Yeah, I wanted to try the PM stack. And so I went off melatonin. And yeah, the PM stack seems to be good for that. So yeah, so I think... melatonin is another one of those things that's probably worth experimenting with in isolation and seeing if 1 milligram like really helps your sleep. Well, just take 1 milligram, but like maybe 10 milligrams will make you a super sleeper and give you that leverage to accomplish so much else in life.
I think the sweet spot with melatonin is supposed to be 300 micrograms, right? But it's quite hard to find that dose. But that is supposed to be like the sweet spot. But you don't see anyone selling those doses. As you say, you go into Walgreens or CVS or wherever you buy it or online, it's like 5 milligrams, 3 milligrams. 3 milligrams is then 10 times the dose that's actually kind of recommended. So yeah, the phytomelatonins would come in around about 300 micrograms. But I think you're right. It is one of those ingredients I think would be seriously interesting for biohackers to really experiment with.
Ed, the next thing I want to talk about before we wrap up here is Optimally Me. Optimally Me, your other company, which is not really a consumer-facing company. If I'm understanding it correctly, what you do is work with healthcare practitioners, and you have a AI platform that crunches a bunch of data based upon patients and then gives them more precise recommendations so they can just be more effective healers. And I was curious, that is an AI company. I was curious if there's like some unexpected findings from the data out of that.
A lot of the data or the information there, I can't really say too much. There are obviously some things we see with certain supplements. We essentially sell the technology to companies that more or less offer DNA testing or blood testing or microbiome testing to consumers. So we do get a lot of the information through surveys, through supplementation. There's obviously some interesting data. I think a lot of things that you would expect to work do work on the supplementation side. I don't know if there's anything like super that stands out. I mean, it's a lot, and to go through all that data, it's a lot of information. So the algorithm itself, I think, is producing recommendations on the platform. But yeah, nothing I can share personally, I don't think.
Okay, sure. So something I noticed on your website today that I'm actually going to direct people to is you had a pretty good little survey that takes just about 5 minutes to go through, where you describe age, sex, and your, like, what your health goals are. So I went through that today. And let's see, it recommended me the two products that I've got back there behind me. And then also it recommended me the hyaluronic acid face gel. And because one of my goals was, I was, my anti, it said, select your anti-aging goals. And so it was like, increase energy. And then I was like, well, I appear on the internet, so I should be beautiful, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And the face gel came in. I was like, yeah, that's actually a pretty good idea, because I've got to get a webcam upgrade here soon. And so I was like, yeah. Like, my appearance kind of matters. Frankly, it matters to me most, like, in my marriage, because I think as married people, we have like an obligation to try to be as close as possible to as attractive as we were when we met them, right?
Well, it's true.
Also because I'm getting a new webcam, and I need to like look good. And so that that survey was helpful. So I would direct people to check out that. And then Youth and Earth is one of the Limitless Mindset, I call it Secret Society recommended vendors. And that's primarily just because you guys do COA testing of your supplements. And that's a really important thing. And so for the listeners, if you guys and gals pick up $300 worth of their stuff, you get a free biohacking consultation with me. And their stuff is actually not very expensive. So $300 would be like quite a bit of product. So what I might suggest there is, with the holidays coming up here, you know, you've got some family member, someone you care about, who you love, who's got health problems that they are going to be complaining about around the Thanksgiving table, and then complaining about the same problems around the Christmas table. And you could get them like a good substantial supply of something that's going to make a difference. And you don't even tell them about it. You don't even tell them about this as a gift. You just hand it to them and say, this tastes amazing. Try it and see what happens. That would be a way that I think people could get to like $300. And then I would really love to talk with them. That's like one of my favorite parts of my job.
No, absolutely. No, it sounds great. A great gift. The gift of health and wellness over Christmas can't be underestimated, especially as we come into January, New Year, New You. It's an interesting time now, November, December. I guess in America, there's a lot of Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is an American holiday, and I wish it was a holiday that we could export to the whole rest of the world, as we have exported so many things to the rest of the world, because it's a holiday where we celebrate the pioneering, brave spirit, while at the same time expressing gratitude for the things that we all have to be thankful for, yet we so often forget to express gratitude, which is such a powerful biohack. And I chose to get married to my wife on Thanksgiving, just to like double the significance of that holiday. So yeah, it's if you are in good health, like, please dwell on that on Thanksgiving, and try to share that And with nothing more profound to say than that, I'm Jonathan with Limitless, looking forward to a continued conversation with you.
Snow taps the window like a gentle drum. Another year passes, another one to come. They gather round tables with vitamins in tow, talking choices to keep their lifespans on the grow. Thanksgiving warmth in the cold season spin, where gratitude's a place all good things begin. So deck the halls with things that last, not just memories or holidays past. In gratitude the years feel bright, longevity shines like a northern light. Thanksgiving joy in a Christmas song, a season of things that carries on. There's an amen beside the stockings hung, longevity talk in every tongue. They laugh about sugar decline, the cake favoring molecules that help the cells awake. In winter's hush their spirits rise, chasing a future where youth never dies. Amid holiday lights and cinnamon air, they chat about health span, staying aware. Supplements beat snowfall treats, someone said, as long as the mitochondria stay well fed. November fades into December grays, but gratitude keeps the heartbeats pace. So deck the halls with things that last, not just memories of holidays past. In gratitude the years feel bright, longevity shines like a northern light. Thanksgiving joy in a Christmas song, a season of thanks that carries on. The year grows older, but they feel young by a hacking jokes on every tongue. They toast to science, to Christmas cheer, to staying vital another year. And under holly, they share the truth. Gratitude itself preserves your youth. From festive feasts to mindful days, they give thanks in countless ways. Even in the rush of the holiday peat, they choose movement, sunlight, foods clean and neat. In the glow of winter, their hearts ignite. Thankful for health, for light. Slow burning lights on a frosty night. Warm hearts beating in rhythm tight. Holiday cheer with a life hack twist. Gratitude's the gift no one should miss. Go shopping at Youth and Earth via the links below. Their supplements are tastier than tempting treats you'll be offered over the holidays. Feel your season wisely and gratefully.